What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Fear Being Average podcast, guest episode number 39 with my guest today, Kwezi Millington. He is a resiliency expert, a speaker, and an author. He has written two books, Rise Above and the Rise Journal. This man's story is incredible. If you want to talk about a practitioner in the world of resiliency, what he went through, that which we discuss on this episode, and coming back from it, keeping a positive progressive mindset behind his circumstances, his situation, and coming up on the other end to educate people. Incredibly inspiring. This is a fantastic episode that we dive into the art of resiliency along with different health practices to keep your mind sharp, to keep yourself motivated, and to keep yourself moving forward in a very positive, healthy, growth-oriented manner. So this is a fantastic episode for anyone who's looking to increase their ability to access their resiliency, as Kwezi likes to talk about. But a great episode. Looking forward for everyone to listen to today. And like always, be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. That way you get up-to-date notifications when new episodes do get launched, do get published. And also share the podcast with other people that would get inspiration from such a listen. Everybody, enjoy today's episode, and we'll see you in the next episode of the Fear Being Average podcast. Okay, I'm here with Kwezi Millington. Very excited. I was a guest on your podcast a few months ago, maybe a year ago now. Time flies by.
Yeah, it's been a while.
maybe 5 years ago.
I follow you online, and then I'm always motivated by you, so I'm happy to come on here and talk to you again.
Yeah, well, right back at you, hence why you are on the Fear Being Average podcast. And it's funny, prior to this podcast recording, I had a nice little run on the treadmill, and it's just crazy. I feel like exercise has to be the best free, accessible drug in the world.
Yeah. I'm with you. I love a workout, and it's, you can do it with all moods, right? So if you're angry, you can take it out on the weight or in the gym. If you're happy, you'll get even happier going to the gym. So either way, I'm with you. I love working out. Now, I don't think I've worked out as much since I've had my son as I did before. I mean, I used to be a 5-6 day a week person, and now I kind of have to be more creative. I'm doing my, 3 days a week right now, but still just mixing it up and adding more compound movements based on what I've learned from you too.
So, that's awesome. Well, that's a cool turn. Let's kind of dive in that off the bat. We have a lot to talk about today, but I like the idea of that narrative that you are someone who has a child, 2-year-old. So obviously you've had some crazy years over the last couple of years with, I'm sure, sleep deprivation and having to adjust your schedule. And for me, it's easier to look at the broad stroke of what's going on with other people and try to assume how I would approach it. Obviously, I'm someone who doesn't make a lot of excuses. I really prevent myself from not taking fault or ownership of my own reality. And I do put that standard on a lot of other people. However, I'm not someone who has 2 kids, or I'm running around and I'm have a partner to take care of, like in my living space. So I can appreciate and empathize that I don't have the same situation as someone like yourself or some of my clients. But because you are coming from a place that's a little bit more, you know, credible, because you are a parent, you are someone who has a career, you are busy. Talk a little bit about the adjustment you've had to make from, you know, having that 5-6 day workout routine. And like you kind of mentioned, going into a 3-day routine, but still making it work, still staying consistent and making sure that you're taking care of your mental and physical health.
Yeah. Wow. There's so much there. I mean, approaching it as a parent, and I mean, my background was in policing, but I've also done personal training as well too. I'm also a certified wellness personal training coach. And before having kids, I think I was like you. I have a high standard for myself, and as you say, I put that on other people, and I kind of challenge them to, you know, be their best selves, all that. I've gotten a lot more compassionate, I think, about the place that a parent comes from, because I used to have parents that I would coach, and they would tell me, oh, you know, I don't have any time to work out, you know, it's so hard to get motivated. And I would say, listen, we all have our excuses. We all have our life. And you know what? You're busy. I'm busy. We have things that we have to try to make important if they're important to us, and we'll fit in if it's important. So I had all that going on, and then I became a parent, and then I stopped working out. I'll be honest. I mean, my first probably, I don't know how long, but there were times when I would get a workout in a week. There was a time when I'd go 2 weeks without a workout, and my balance just fell way off. And I thought, wow, okay, I've given myself excuses. I've not done anything, and it's not because I'm a bad person. It's not because I don't think it's important to be healthy and work out. I'm tired. And I don't have the time, and I'm like, I've become that. And now, as I get back into finding a rhythm between just being just as busy with a parent now, as a parent now, but getting back to prioritizing my health, I'm just more compassionate to people that are parents, and I understand it's still the same. The same message that I share is like, you got to prioritize your health and fitness. But I understand as a parent that sometimes there'll be things that fall by the wayside. So I try to come up with now different strategies to help them get through that.
Yeah, it's a tough balance, right? Because you want to be empathetic with yourself. Like, you don't want to beat yourself up if you miss a workout or if you happen to miss a week of working out. But then there's also that side of things where you got to have the self-awareness to know you can't just let yourself off the hook because things are busy, right? So it's a really fine dance between empathy and self-awareness. So the self-awareness keeps you accountable. The empathy doesn't beat yourself up and make you feel like a shitty person just because you weren't able to necessarily stick to your routine. So what was the process like from going to someone who kind of fell out of sorts with your workouts, then you got back into it? So what changed there? Was it a perspective shift? Was it an adjustment of how you work out? What was the kind of the main turning point? What was that process kind of, what did that process consist of?
I like the way you just put it, the balance between empathy and self-awareness. And that's very important, not to beat yourself up, because if you're so far down, you're not going to get back into anything. But being self-aware to know, okay, I got to do something before it gets out of control. And mm-hmm. I came from a background, when I say 5 to 6 days a week, I used to work out like that, not only because I was in the fitness industry, but I did fitness modeling competitions years ago. And that was just my mindset. And so I had my shoulder days and, you know, my chest days and my back day, and everything was just, you know, the bodybuilding type mentality. Not that I'm a bodybuilder, but you know what I mean? Yeah. So getting back into working out now, I know that for the time being, 5 days is never going to happen for me. So it's just kind of the way my life is right now. And that's self-awareness, not making excuses, like you said. So now it's more compound movement. So I take, you know, Paul Cech has these primal pattern movements that he's always talked about. And so I started getting into, you know, just overall moving my body. So I might have a squat push day, and then I might have a bend lift day to make sure that over a course of 3 days, I'll get everything worked out, but not in the, I got to make this muscle look a certain way mentality anymore. I just got to be functional, got to move. And I do shorter workouts now, Brendan. I mean, I used to do 1 hour, 90-minute workouts. Sometimes I'd be at the gym 2 hours, easy. And I just love it. It's my church. But now I think I have – some days I have 20 minutes. Some days I have 30 minutes. And so some days I even do 10 to 15 minutes. I just set it up to Tabata timer, keep the intensity high, which is what most people are missing, and go from there. And I don't beat myself up over – 3 workouts versus 2 workouts 1 week, but I stay consistent. And the biggest thing was nutrition. I had to come back before I was getting consistent with my working out, getting my nutrition right, because that's 24/7. And even if I have a week when I missed a workout, at least I could say, okay, I ate healthy this week. I kept my energy levels where they need to be, you know?
And I feel like even the nutrition part, that's going to complement healthy behaviors, right? If you eat right, you sleep right, you manage your stress, you're more likely to have that logical conversation with yourself and be more self-aware and not give yourself an out. So those things, they certainly complement. I guarantee if you had McDonald's every night, you wouldn't be more motivated to go work out, right? You would probably feel very lethargic. You would feel drained. You'd be more emotional, tired. So eating is just a prerequisite to really kind of harness that behavior. And it's funny, I did a webinar for my BR365 Strength Squad group on Monday, and we were talking about how to balance life and exercise. You never compromise either. And we honed in on the idea of 30 minutes or less as one of the slides. And just because you can't get a 60-minute workout in and you have to adjust doesn't mean you need to skip your workout that day. And like you mentioned, that was one of the things I touched on, was the idea of doing a little bit of circuit training or high-intensity training, or to your point, just getting a lot of value like Paul Cech style, focus on a big compound movement. Do 5 sets of 5 reps of back squats within 20 minutes. That's going to really move the needle forward. You can practice a very functional, multidimensional movement, and you're going to get a lot of benefit from it. So there's always ways to kind of manipulate the time frame. You can go supersets, you can make it into giant sets, you can do complexes, whatever way you want to kind of play around with it. But just because you don't have an hour and it might just be 20 minutes, sometimes my best workouts in a week are 15 minutes. You know, it wasn't necessarily planned that way, but the intensity is really high. I'm pushing my body. I don't want to do that every day because I don't want to chronically stress out the system. But those days, I'm like, wow, that was a great, like today, I did an aerobic conditioning workout. It was an 8-minute as fast as possible on the treadmill. 8-minute workout with a 15-minute incline afterwards, walk. So the whole workout took me 23 minutes, right? And I could have easily done 5 or 10 minutes afterwards. I feel great. I feel this sense of euphoria, this dopamine rush. Like, so it's one of those things of like, don't let yourself off the hook completely and find an alternative.
Yeah. Absolutely, and even shorter workouts. I mean, I've had times when I do 15 or less. I mean, a 10-minute workout just to move the body, especially now with, I think we've gotten more sedentary with the pandemic and everything. So just moving does wonders, and even getting outside and doing a workout too. And I've seen some of your videos. You preach that.
Yeah.
Getting out in nature as well too. So yeah, anyways.
Yeah, I love the content you put out there, because you do talk about the idea of movement as medicine, and you do hint on the idea of getting outside and getting in nature and expressing your body in a different element, right? And just getting outside of four walls can be so healthy for you. And as you age and you get a little older, it's less about building this sculpted physique, right? Everyone wants to look a little bit better, for sure. But in the day, moving your body and exercising in some degree that day is more about the mental well-being and keeping you yourself more connected to the idea of nurturing your health and your self-care. So you do a great job of it, man, and I love hearing about the nature element.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. No, it's just I think I saw a video of you training some of your clients in the snow
one
time. And got me, okay, I gotta get outside a little bit.
Well, this
more,
is the season for it, right? We're in December, and I'm lucky to have my one group. I think we've been out there for 18, 19 months. So basically when the pandemic started, we were out there, and we've been consistent throughout the whole thing. So we've made it through the hot days and the hot months, and now we're into the cold months. So let's hope we can keep tracking along. So, Quez, awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your story, because you're a motivational speaker. You've written a book on resiliency. I'm looking at your book right here, The Rise Journal. So you're putting out a lot of good content. But that came out of not necessarily necessity, but life happened to you. So if you don't mind diving into your story, because your story is pretty remarkable. It's very unique. I'm reading a book right now called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Obviously talking about Auschwitz and him in the concentration camp. And here, and I'm about, I don't know, 50 pages into it, but obviously the concept is a gentleman who was put in a situation that he had no real control over, obviously tortured in really dire elements and environments, and he obviously, you know, lived to tell the story, but he talks a lot about how he kept his mind focused on getting out of there, but in a unique way. It wasn't like, oh my God, I need to get out of here, but he did it in a very present manner. Where your situation, it's different, but it's the same in a weird way. So I'd love for you to kind of dive into it and kind of share that side, because it's a pretty wild story.
I'll do that. I'll give you the Coles Notes version when I do this on stage motivationally. I'm speaking for an hour, but I have less time now. So I'll give you the Coles Notes version. I used to be a police officer with Canada's National Police Force, the RCMP. You can read about me online. I always tell everybody that you can read my full story online. I responded with other officers back in 2007. to an airport incident. A lot of people know the YBR incident. People, I guess, I shouldn't say people know, but a lot of people know about it. Unfortunately, we got into an altercation with a man, and he died after we got into an altercation with him, after we arrested him. The incident was taped. It was in a public airport. We went to a public inquiry. I say we, myself, and three other officers. And I was charged with perjury out of that. I testified as to what I did at the airport. I never told a lie about it. I always told the truth, but I was charged with perjury. And I was convicted of perjury. I never committed that crime, but I was convicted of it. And I ended up getting sentenced to 2.5 years in jail for something I never did. Here's the thing. In Man's Search for Meaning, I know that he says that when your circumstances can't change, you have to change yourself. And that's to paraphrasing. I know that it's not the real quote, but at the end of the day, when I was in prison, one of the things that I had to do was start figuring out what's the next stage in my life. And I didn't know what it was for a long time. And I remember I became a tutor in the prison school. And I remember I met the English teacher who brought me on to tutor some of the other inmates. And he said that he could be anywhere he wanted to be. I said, okay, why are you here teaching in the prison? He said, I could be out there, but 89% of prison inmates don't have a high school diploma. And by being in there and helping them get that diploma, and you helping me by tutoring them, we can help them get out there and make a better life. And when he said that to me, Brendan, it showed me that when someone knows their why they do things, they can rise above anything and they can be motivated to do anything. And he was so motivated to do this job in the prison and reminded me to look at my own why. And when I became a police officer, my why was to help people that didn't have answers get the answers they need, get the help they need. And I thought, okay, well, I can still do that. How can I do that? And by asking myself how, instead of closing myself off, a circuit of steps led me to saying, okay, listen, I can go do this speaking thing. I can go out and I can speak to kids, I can speak to organizations on how to be resilient, how to bounce back when things don't go your way. And that's what led me into speaking. Because I know there are people out there that don't have those answers. They don't know, okay, when I get stressed, when I get overwhelmed, when I get anxious, what do I do? And from a prison, from the life that I've led, I just take those and I've written, like you said, the book Rise. And the journal is just the add-on to that. And I speak to try to help people who don't have those answers get them through the things I've been through.
So how fast were you able to reframe your situation? So you get wrongfully convicted, you have to do time now, you know you're innocent, circumstances aren't changing, so you now need to change. How fast did it take you, or how long did it take you, sorry, to reframe, like, okay, well, this is the situation I'm in, I can't do much about it, I might as well make the best out of it. Like, how long, what was that process like? Was there a certain moment of having an internal conversation with yourself? Was it just something that you're naturally gifted at, kind of reframing your situation? Go a little bit, elaborate about that situation a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I definitely could do that. And I don't think it was overnight. And there was a long period between when I was charged and when I ended up going to prison. But I can say, if you want a time period, it was probably a week. Because I got into when I had to walk through those prison doors, up until that point, I had gone through appeals, and it was the day after I lost my last appeal that I had to turn myself into the prison. And up until that point, then up until just the day before, I thought, okay, somewhere along the line, someone's going to hear my appeal and I'm going to get a new trial or something's going to get overturned. And I kept saying, I'm not going to jail for this. And then 24 hours later, I'm in jail. So the first week inside was a lot of that questioning. Okay, what am I doing here? I wasn't reframing anything. I was just so angry because I thought, well, why am I here for something I didn't do? What am I going to do with my life? All I wanted to do was try to help people. And something tragic happened, and I was, you know, scapegoated for it. That's the way I looked at the situation. And I kept going through that cycle. And I say a week in because I got access to the prison library finally a week into my sentence, and I found a book in that library that helped to reframe the way I was thinking about things. The book is called The New Earth. The author is Eckhart Tolle. And in that book, he said that, you know, when your situation isn't the way you want it to be, you either change it or you accept it. And that's all you can do. And so I chose to try to accept the situation I was in. And he talks about presence in the book umpteen times. He wrote The Power of Now. Yeah. He talks about coming back to the present moment, responding only to what the present moment requires. And that quote stuck in my head to this day, because he said that the only time you can do anything in your life is now. And so every day in jail was a new now to do something, maybe not grand, maybe not big, but just something right now. And whether it was journaling, starting to read more books, meditating, becoming a tutor in the prison, getting in a workout, calling family, whatever the day was, that's how I got through those days, by just dealing with each individual day. And I'm not superhuman. There were days where I was like, okay, I want to get out of here. I'm ready to get into the real world again. I want to get out of this prison. I wanted to get out. But I kept bringing myself back to the moment. And that's when I was able to start reframing and just say, okay, what's the best move? What's the right move right now? And that's how I got through it. That's still how I get through life, actually, yeah. Because, you know, tomorrow we don't know exactly what's going to happen. So that rule has worked well for me in life.
Well, it's really important because it is so transferable. Like you said, whether you're in jail or you're living the everyday life in society right now, things change every moment. We're obviously going through something right now with the pandemic where people don't know what next week's going to hold. No one knows what's going to happen 6 months from now or a year from now. So, like, the best thing you can do is just roll with the punches the best you can, control what you can control, and deal with the circumstances at hand, and not dwell on what you have to give up, what you're sacrificing, what you don't have access to, because you can be pissed about it. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of times that I go on a little bit rants and I preach about, man, this is unfair and this is bullshit. However, I don't stay there because it's not going to help the situation at large, right? And I don't want that particular space to affect four or five other avenues that could bring me a lot of fulfillment and light. Knowing that just kind of keeps me focused on what I can do to make the rest of my life better, and what I can do to actually control the situation.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing you mentioned, that you have to put a time limit on your bitching and complaining. Yeah. If you are pissed about something today, say, cool, I'm pissed about it today, and I'm going to take 48 hours to act like a baby about it. And after those 48 hours, I had to ask myself, okay, what's next? What do I do next? But give yourself that time, but put a cap on it, and put an actual cap on it. That's the way I get through things a lot now too.
Yeah, I love that. So why do you think, I think we're in a you know, pretty unique time, at least for in my life, and I'm sure your life as well, and probably everybody's living in a pretty unique situation that we're in. Why do you think that there is a lack of personal resiliency? I feel like a lot of people, and again, you might not agree with that statement. You might say, well, I think we're very resilient right now. I see things a little bit differently. I feel like we lack a lot of personal responsibility, and I feel like people are a little bit more prone to, you know, break down and stress out, and the numbers do show it. Obviously, we have very high amounts of, you know, anxiety and depression and suicide. So obviously there's a lack of personal resiliency to push past tough times. What do you think is contributing to that?
To go back to what Tolle said in that book, he said there's only two things in your life that cause you stress. Only two things. When you think about the past and when you think about the future. So if you look at the time we're in now, we are thinking about the past. Wow, this pandemic started in, you know, 2020, and we're still here. Geez, why is it like this? Da, 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 da. And then we're thinking about the future, and we're constantly focused, okay, well, this new variant, or what's happening in 2022, what's going to happen? And the media does this to us a lot. They get us focused on, okay, you should have done this yesterday, buy this product, you can be a better person than that. So they get you focused on the past, and they get you focused on the future. Okay, you better worry about this, you better worry about this. And so they pull us out of that present. And if you're asking why there's more anxiety now, and that's what I believe is why that is because now more than ever, I think we're really stuck between those polarities of past and focusing on the future and worrying about the future, that can only lead to depression and anxiety. So that's why you're seeing those levels. The flip side to that is when it comes to building resilience, a lot of times people don't know they don't know the tools to use, right? So when I was on the street as a police officer, I was trained to use a certain tool. So if I give you the belt, you might say, okay, I don't know which tool to use, but I know, okay, certain ones call for pepper spray, certain things call for the baton or the taser, certain things call for me to pull out my firearm. But I know I have the tools to use and I'm trained. So when I talk to people, I say, okay, you just don't know you are resilient. Here's some tools that you can use on a daily basis to help you build it. And that bringing that awareness, I think, is going to help a lot of people. So it's not that we're not resilient, it's just we don't know how to pull it out.
Okay, so what are some of those main strategies and tools that you would suggest to the average person who feels like they might be lacking the ability to bring out their resiliency and show it to the world? So what are some of those strategies?
Well, there's a lot of different things that I talk about, but a few that pop up to my mind, first of all, is like you said before, the acceptance factor. So being able to say, okay, this has happened, I have to accept that it's happened. And one way to really do that is to make yourself what I call change proof. So there are little things that you can do to kind of build your ability to handle uncertainty. And the studies have shown that when you make small changes in your life, it makes you more resilient to handle big changes. Then you know this. You've done 100 days of used to do the 365 challenge, and I've seen things on your website. You've challenged yourself over and over again. So you built your resilience that way because you've challenged yourself to do something new all the time. Now, we don't have to all carry logs on our backs. If it's flipping the toilet paper roll, in some of my workshops, I just say that, go home and change that toilet paper roll around. So instead of over, flip it to under. Change something small in your life every once in a while, walking a different route to the gym or driving a different way to work. If you start doing these things, makes you more resilient for bigger changes. It sounds crazy that toilet paper changing can lead to you being able to handle losing your job, but the studies do back up that these things do work. So that's one of the biggest things I would say. Silent time is another one. I think we're too distracted, and there's too much noise we allow into our lives. So that walking in nature or spending time meditating, whatever it is, every single day, at least 5 to 10 minutes where you have electronic free time. Mandatory, have to have it, because a lot of people, they wake up, they're on their phones, and then their mind's buzzing all day.
Well, it's funny how many people are engaging in avenues that naturally just trigger them almost immediately, right? And it's understanding what environments and what spaces trigger you subconsciously. Like even for me, I realized recently, I'll go on Instagram and I have to post for business purposes and it's a good way for me to connect with people. But at the same time, you go on there sometimes, you go on there to post or share a story, and all of a sudden you're scrolling and you're looking through the stories and you're kind of mindlessly.
Rabbit hole.
Oh man, oh, the rabbit hole big time, right? And yeah. I noticed that I would just get not triggered necessarily with anger or a really negative emotion, but I wouldn't feel this positive, enhanced version of myself after I got off. I always had a kind of like a icky feeling of, like I could have been doing something differently, or that kind of annoyed me, and oh man, this person's doing that again. It's like I had to realize that, okay, well, this space, at least being on it too frequently, is triggering me too often. So if I get triggered for a moment when I post and I happen to scroll by something, so be it, right? I'll remove myself from the situation, but that doesn't mean I need to go back onto that space and allow myself to be triggered again. And that can be conversations you're having. It can be the people that you're surrounding yourself with. It can be the activities that you're not doing. So it's kind of keeping that self-awareness about the situation at whole and wondering, okay, well, what are certain things? I think people, we get a little lazy that we get triggered, but we never actually try to find the root cause of what's triggering us. And if we just took the time to, and again, that's what I like about the Rise Journal. Not only is it a journal for morning gratitude and an opportunity to be mindful in the morning, but then there's also the, at the end of the day, you go back and kind of like reassess the day a little bit, and you look for, as you call it, a noteworthy moment from the day. So you have some personal engagement. So you can go back, and that can be a positive, obviously noteworthy moment, or it can be something of like, wow, I was on social media, you know, 10 different times today, and every single time I noticed I was triggered, or I was less productive afterwards. So self-auditing your situation can be so powerful, and I get it takes work, and that's something that I'm a very big advocate of. You can't just say, I want to be happy. Speaking the words is one thing, right? I look in the mirror, I am beautiful, I am strong, very powerful, very empowering. However, you still need to act on that verbiage. You still need to do things that show that you care about yourself, that show that you're actually trying to pursue happier, fitter, healthier, more resilient.
Yeah. And it comes down to that self-awareness piece that you're mentioning, right? So if you say, I'm happy, then your day, yes, you have to do things, but it's also being aware of, okay, this is a situation that I wasn't expecting that could expand my happiness. Let me explore it, right? So once you start to say these things, you start attracting opportunities to expand that thing. So yeah, it's about the taking the action. And you've taught me something actually about using my own journal. When you talk about the noteworthy moment of the day, I always think of something positive, something I can write a story about, but it can be something that I need to watch out for, or something that is a habit that I need to stop doing, or, you know, analyzing your feelings. So yeah, I'm gonna start using that section for that as well.
Well, I feel like it's a fine balance, because I think obviously your approach, you're the guy who wrote the journal, and you had an intention in mind. I think, you know, finishing your day off on a high, on a positive note, something that was noteworthy, is probably better for you. But there's still that aspect of looking at your day and having an honest conversation with how it went. And that way you can actually not make that same mistake, or not be triggered again in the same fashion tomorrow. And if you keep doing that, eventually you're going to start eliminating these aspects of triggered moments or negativity, and you can kind of be more productive. That's at least the way I look at it. I used to work at a direct marketing job, and we'd always break down sales reps day after the day was done, and you would focus on, hey, what did you do well today? Let's talk about that. Let's highlight what you did really well, and let's kind of hone in on that tomorrow as well. But we wanted to obviously hone in on, what did we not do so well? Where is an opportunity in the day? Because maybe you didn't have that many sales, and as much as we want to focus on the positives, we don't want you to have another day where you only make $40. You know, like we want you to be successful here. So we have to, in a critical fashion, but also in a constructive fashion, figure out how we can make your day more successful, more productive tomorrow. And that's that self-auditing situation, I feel, is very powerful. So for those people at home that might be saying, okay, I get resiliency is important, but you know what? I think I'm doing okay. What are some of the main attributes attached to becoming a more resilient version of yourself? Like, this is something I'm 100% behind. Like, the two things I really preach are strength and resiliency. So for me, I understand the value of it. What would you say to, you know, a layman who might be saying like, okay, I get that it's important to be resilient, but I really don't know how to quantify that. What are some of those characteristics of a resilient person, and how would their life actually improve?
Absolutely. First off, it's not a score sheet that to say, okay, I'm resilient, or I've achieved resilience. It's one of those things that you don't perfect and you work on it. Attributes of a resilient person, I would say the awareness piece is huge. So if you're aware and you're accountable, those are two things that I see in the resilient people that I've seen, that I've helped become resilient, and that are my role models. They are accountable. They take responsibility for their feeling, for their mood, for their emotions. They're aware. They look at themselves and they ask themselves, okay, what did I do well? How can I improve? And they're always looking to be students. And those are two of the main things. And also being able to reframe a situation. So if they're able to take a loss and not necessarily make it better, but find something that they could take from it. Because I don't think that not every situation that you go through that's negative is going to give you something great and positive, but there is something that can be a learning point or make you a better person in some way. And if you can take that out, that's what I've seen the most resilient people I know do.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were to pick maybe the lowest hanging fruit, the thing that you can do tomorrow that would really kind of start this process of becoming more resilient, what would be one of those things that you think would be a big mover, a big needle mover in terms of, we talked about exercise, a big compound movement, a big bang for your buck exercise. What's a big bang for your buck move that we can do tomorrow that you think would really help start the process of becoming a little bit more resilient?
Don't have your phone anywhere near you to start the day. Okay. And start your day in silence. And whatever that is for you, an example could be setting a timer on your phone or your watch and just sitting in absolute silence for 5 minutes, just breathing. At the end of the 5 minutes, you get out a pen and paper, you get out a journal, you write down some thoughts and just an intention for the day. And I write in my journal intention because it could be the goals you want to do for the day, or it could be just the type of person you want to be in that day. So if it's a one bang for the buck thing, bang for your buck thing, silence first thing off the bat. Don't be on your phone for at least the first half an hour to 45 minutes of the day if you can avoid it.
Yeah, I think it really sets the tone, right? I think it allows you to get connected to, like, you know, what you want to do today, the things that you are grateful for, because that's one of the aspects of the Rise Journal here, is that you talk about expressing things that you are grateful for. And you want to kind of outline why you pick a certain frame for the journal here and kind of your thought process. And again, obviously early on in the book, you do describe it, and you kind of go over all the aspects. But in terms of, like, how would you, why did you, I guess, put in that order, and why do you think the power is so great in terms of being more grateful and sharing more gratitude, being more present, setting your intention, setting the tone for the day?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And with the Rise Journal, I think it was released this year, but it's been years in the making up here. And I've done other journals. I've said, okay, well, I've always been interested in journal because I've studied successful people and they all journal. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'm going to do it too. And there have been times where I take a blank book and I just write thoughts in it. And that worked for a while. And then there was times when I just add pieces in and I realized the pieces that stayed, the pieces that worked best for me, help me create the framework for the Rise Journal. And the four areas are reframing, identifying, self-care, and engagement. So the four areas that I picked were: always start your day with writing something you're grateful for. Studies show that gratitude increases happiness, lowers depression. Studies are in on that one.
Yeah.
Second area is intention. People who set goals and who just identify whether it's the person they want to be, because I opened it up, not just write down your goals. You can use it for that, but you can also use it to just write down, okay, today I want to be more present. Today my goal is to just, not put myself down so much. Or it can be just intentions for what you want to get done that day. When you have a direction for your day, you have more energy, more pep in your step. Third area, self-care. The reason I wrote that one is because we beat ourselves up too much. And so when we can come up with ways to say, today I accept myself, or today I'm feeling great, whatever those words are, when you say it often enough, you believe it. And then those are the three sections for the morning. My journal, I'd like you to come back at the end of the day, not only read over what you wrote for the day, see if you got your intentions done, but also come back and ask yourself, what was noteworthy for today? And the reason that I added that in is because we go through so much of our life and we're coming up to the end of the year and people are like, okay, what did I do this year? What's going on? And when you look through a few pages, you might say, okay, today, this is a cool thing that happened today, or this is something I noticed about myself today. Mm-hmm. And it just gives you something to say to yourself, okay, you know what? There are things I'm learning all the time. I'm growing all the time. I'm experiencing things. And it helps you to appreciate the small as well. So it adds more gratitude to the end of your day too. And that's why I made those four sections.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, they underestimate or undervalue how powerful winning the day is. Because I get we have these big milestone goals that we want to accomplish. Maybe it's somebody who wants to lose 30 or 40 pounds, or someone that wants to run a marathon, or someone that wants to write a book, for example, or become a speaker, or transition out of their job. And it seems very daunting, right? And it's that idea of when you think about the future, it can feel overwhelming to the point where you're not going to do anything in the present moment because you don't know where to start. And this is such a good reframe of how you can set your intention for the day and just kind of lay a brick down, you know? And like over time, it might take you 365 days, might take you 2 years, 5 years, whatever. And it's not even the goal. And I was just listening to a neuroscientist talk on the School of Greatness show, Andrew Huberman there. And he was talking about the idea of focusing on the process of growth, not what you're going to achieve. Like don't have that pot of gold mentality where you're only going to be happy getting the thing that you think you want, because rarely that's the case, right? And again, I can attest to it. I'm sure you can as well. It's not the idea of if tomorrow I gave you a pill and all of a sudden you were in shape and you lost 30 pounds, you would feel pretty excited for, I don't know, 24 hours, maybe a week or so. But it wouldn't be long before you kind of felt like the same person before, and you'd probably go back into the poor habits that you were already engaging in. So I think people undervalue just the process of getting stronger, of building resiliency, of having more gratitude, of setting intentions and seeing that needle move slowly but surely. But it's so, so powerful. And I think a lot of people underestimate just how important it is.
Yeah, and there's things that you learn along the way. I mean, I don't look at going to jail as a good thing, but what I had to go through, you grow through what you go through, right?
Yeah.
So when you go through things, that's how you get better. That's why they always, I was reading a book the other day and it said that if a person builds their own wealth, they have way more resilient qualities than if it was just handed to them. So if they're just a trust fund baby or whatever, they don't have the resilience because they didn't do what it took to build that. And so, yeah, that's part of what you're saying. Enjoy the journey, not the destination. It's an old quote, but we still got to come back to these things.
Yeah, I think some of the moments that I've grown the most off of were ones that I failed at. You know, I can, because at that point, you really, if you want that goal bad enough and you want to accomplish that feeling of success and you failed at it the first time, like you have no other choice but to go back and really break down what went wrong. Like you have to now self-audit your situation because what you did or who you were or the skill set that you had just wasn't good enough to get the job done. So at that point, you have no other option but to break it all down and kind of build it back up. So it's easy to handle success, right? It's easy to win and keep winning and feel great about yourself. But until you kind of really feel those losses, it's not going to force you into doing something different. And for some people, it might break them, right? They might lose and they might not hate the feeling of losing, and it might scare them away. But again, I think if someone's has the ability to bounce back, that's obviously an attribute of being resilient, right? Seeing it, reframing the situation, looking at the opportunity, looking at the light of the situation to say, hey, okay, maybe I wasn't the person I thought I was, but now I have the opportunity to actually become that person in a genuine fashion because, you know, all cards are on the table, right? Like they're flipped. Like I'm not that person. And it's okay to admit that. It's okay to know that you fell short. And to me, I would rather know that. I would rather live a truth and go, you know what, I'm not that person I think I am because it's the proof's right in front of me, and then fix it so I can become that person compared to saying I'm somebody that I'm not and then being internally dissatisfied or internally suffering because I'm not that person and I don't have the wherewithal to really admit that or own it.
Yeah, and the big thing with that too is people have to put more value on how they see themselves versus how other people see them. And they don't, there's a lot of people that want to show this image because they want everybody to see them as this. And the more value, the more internal satisfaction comes when you feel good about who you become because you created it, not just because other people see it. In fact, sometimes nobody sees it, but you've accomplished it, and that's all that matters, right?
So. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the takeaway, right? Like, you want to do whatever you're pursuing, do it for you, right? The external validation or admiration is great. You know, you can take it, you can accept it, you can feel great about yourself from it. But don't let that be the thing that's pulling you to do it, because like you said, you want to make sure what you're doing is authentically attached to yourself. So let's talk a little bit about your environment and the people around you, because I feel like there is this need for everyone to always be told how good that they're doing, right? There's this, like, not entitlement necessarily, but we're scared to have the reality of the situation told to us. And again, I don't know your take on it, and I can kind of get that, I guess. But like for me, it's the idea of competition as a kid. Like, I get you don't want your kid to go out and feel bad about himself losing, but at the same time, like it allows you to really kind of see how things unfold and what you need to get better at. So for me, it's like I want to surround myself with an environment, not necessarily of negative people, obviously. Like, we want the opposite of that. I want positive people, but I want people in my environment that are going to help create a better version of myself. So I don't want to surround myself with yes people that are just telling me what I want to hear, but surrounding myself with people that genuinely care about my well-being and they're willing to tell it to me straight. So you want to kind of highlight the importance, at least in your opinion, in your eyes, of finding that balance of positivity, but also corrective reinforcement that's going to actually help you become that person.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to have people around you that will tell you the truth. But I don't know about you, most people have at least one or two people like that, like their parents or brother or sibling, that will tell them the straight truth. When it comes to surrounding yourself to become better, just surround yourself with people doing way more than you. And it just ends up pulling you up. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to put yourself down because you're not there, but look at yourself as being able to do what everyone else is doing. So whatever you want to do, surround yourself with people doing it at a slightly higher level. Maybe not blow it out of the water, but a slightly higher level. Before I wrote my first book, I used to go to professional speaker meetings, and every fourth person had written a book. So it became normalized to me to write a book. So I didn't think of it as, oh my gosh, this thing I have to do. It was because of the people I surrounded myself with. And that will automatically push you to grow. It doesn't matter if they're telling you yes, if they're yes people or no people. If they're doing things in life, that magnetic pull will start to pull you to want to do more. The problem is people are looking for people just at their level or below so that they feel good about themselves. But you surround yourself with people that are higher than you or doing more things, then that pulls you up to their level as well.
Well, I guess it's like the idea.
I don't know if that answers the question, but
no, for sure. I think it's the idea, like you're kind of highlighting, is like iron sharpens iron, right? Like, you want to do something that slightly pushes your boundaries, right? Because again, if you were always surrounding yourself with people that never wrote a book, like, you really wouldn't know where to start, and it might feel a little bit unfathomable. But because you pushed yourself to learn from people that have done it, it seemed more tangible, obviously.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. But yes, I know what you're saying. You don't want to have people around you that are just pumping you up and making you feel good about what you've done, because then you're tempted to stay at that level or to think you've made it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a fine line. Like, you want a very positive environment because it's uplifting, right? Like, you want to have people that have your back and genuinely want you to do well in life. So you want to have positive affirmations, and you want to have conversations that are uplifting. But at the same time, if you have bigger goals, it's okay to put yourself in a situation that's going to be a little fearful, might be a little intimidating, challenging. You might feel almost like an imposter to a certain degree, and it's okay, right? Because you have a lot of opportunity to grow, and you have a lot of resources around you to get there, right? And you almost need to do it if you're really trying to accomplish some unique goals.
Oh yeah, there's times I feel like an imposter all the time when around other speakers that make more, and you know, trainers and people that have done things that I can't do at all, and I'm just trying to get up to their level, and it is intimidating, but it's good because it pushes you to grow.
So when that's happening, so how do you reframe that situation? Like, because I have moments like that myself, right? I'll listen to someone talk who knows way more about fitness than me, and I go, like, I know a lot, but, like, damn, that guy knows way more than me, and I feel like if he's an expert, what am I? Like, I think I'm an expert, but he just blew it out of the water. He's saying stuff that I couldn't reiterate. He's saying things that, like, I didn't know, but I have to then reframe it and go, okay, he knows more than me. That's great. I can learn from him, and I'm always going to be in a situation where I'm going to learn from more people, because the space I'm in, especially, there's you never know it all. Everything's changing. There's new research, new science. People are experts in different fields. So it's a tough balance, right? Because you want to feel good about yourself, and you want to have the confidence to go on stage like yourself, especially if, you know, for you, you're going on stage and you are educating a corporation and an audience potentially and a group of young men and women. So for you, like, how do you kind of balance that act of knowing that you have a lot more to grow, but you're still credible and you're still good enough from what you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's about surrounding yourself with people on both sides. So, yeah, I know speakers that are way ahead of where I want to be, and it's intimidating at times. So I try to find, as well as those people that help pull me, I have groups of people that I hang around, whether it's in a mastermind group or just a call, an accountability call, that we're all doing the same thing. Mm. So that helps me realize, okay, I'm trying to get there, but other people are trying to get there too. And then on top of that, I'll go sometimes and I'll look on social media, or I'll look on accounts or groups that I'm in with other speakers for people that are just getting started. And not because I want to make fun of them or anything, but I want to say, hey, listen, I have tackled that thing before. Oh, you want to get your website done? Okay, you know what? Let me help you with that. You want to write your speech? Okay, well, this is what I went through when I was creating mine. So it helps me realize, hey, there's people at all levels. There's someone way above. There's people that I hang out that I'm doing the same thing as. And there's people that are below that are still come up. I shouldn't say below, but just yeah. Haven't learned as much. So you can't feel bad in those situations, because you're growing and you're helping. So
for sure,
that's what works for me.
Okay, let's kind of sum this up here, just in terms of, I love that you're obviously someone who, you're a practitioner, right? Not only are you somebody who speaks about it and educates, but you live that life. And I think that's very valuable. I think there's so many resources now where I could be a fitness expert without training a single person, to be quite honest, right? Now, I will say expert in quotes, because I might know a lot, but I'm not much of a practitioner. You know, that's why I took a lot of pride in actually going out there, working with clients, and using that anecdotal experience for myself or with my clients, and then educate others. So for yourself, do you want to talk a little bit about just the importance of kind of sharpening your mind and body on a consistent basis to stay sharp for your profession, to stay sharp in general, and keep yourself accountable to yourself?
So, I mean, body, fueling yourself is very important, and of course working out as well. But when it comes to, you know, what I do, when it comes to speaking, I have low self-esteem when it comes to that. And what do I mean by that? I mean that I always think that there's not enough that I know when I'm going to speak, whether it's to a corporation about building resilience and overcoming stress. I don't know enough, so I need to read. So I'm a constant student. I'm picking up books and statistics and tables and just stories from everywhere, from people that have way more letters after the name, way more degrees. Yeah. So that when I go and I talk to a corporation, I say, hey, listen, this is what I've been through. Here's what I think will work for you, because I know what's worked for me. I feel confident about that. But hey, there's the psychologist who also did research in this area. Here's a study done at the University of California that proves that this worked. And so I back that up, and that gives me the confidence, because I have the competence, right? So confidence comes from competence. And so that's what I would say in any field that you're in. Just read about it, study about it, and add other people's experience to your own. And that just gives you ultimate confidence to be able to talk about your topic. And that's why I can talk about resilience confidently, not just because of what I've been through, but because of what I've studied.
Well, that's the beautiful thing. Regardless of what you're trying to improve on, there's a resource out there. Like, now more than ever, if you want to learn about a certain subject, like, you have a university at home. right? You have access to books, you have libraries. If you want a free book, if you don't want to buy a book, everybody, you can just go to this old thing called a library and you can read free books there, you know, and you can listen to podcasts like this. You can learn from a resiliency expert, and you can listen to someone like yourself who has been there, has been in the trenches, but then also done your homework as an intellect and an academic, and you've learned things from other people. Now you're sharing that knowledge, that external knowledge, with people as well. So it's motivating to hear, because no matter where you are in your life, no matter what your situation looks like, you could be the weakest person in your friend group right now. Guess what? You could develop the skill set to be the toughest and strongest and most resilient person in that group. And you can be a leader in your society, and you can be a leader at your current place of work, and you can be a better parent, you can be a better friend, a better communicator, a better listener. And this is why I love having conversations like this, because I learn from individuals like yourself. You help educate me. Hopefully we can educate people as a duo, and hopefully I can take what I learned today and educate others based on our conversation, our dialogue, and it helps change my perspective. So if I do talk about resiliency, it's not just about Viktor Frankl now, it might be about Kwesi Millington as well in our conversation. And so it's just so empowering to know that there's so many free resources you can pay for, that you can go to a webinar, you can go to a talk, you can go to a seminar or a workshop or conference, and you can improve your situation. It just takes time. And that's why I love something like the Rise Journal. And I know I'm kind of giving you some shameless plugs here, Kwesi, but for me, it really does set the tone. It sets your intention. It allows you to be a little bit more accountable to yourself. And then believe me, there's some days that I resist it in the moment, right? I want to get up and I just want to like not really think about stuff. But every time I do this, my day improves, because now I've given my day some thought. I've created structure. I've created a routine for me to be successful. And I've created that personal accountability to go back onto at the end of the day. And it kind of reframes my prioritization in terms of what I need to get done and things that I actually am grateful for. Because it's really easy to go through a day and not give yourself any positive affirmations, not give yourself any sense of gratitude. And really, it's there. You just need to kind of go out and do it yourself.
Well said. I don't have anything to add to that, and that's a good thing.
Okay, man. So tell us a little bit about where people can listen to you, the messages that you do preach on your social media or your website, or if someone's listening to this and maybe they have a company that they want to outsource your particular skill set with. Where can people find you and connect with you?
KwesiMillington.com. That's my website, and I'm pretty much on all social media. LinkedIn is probably my best place for business. You can find my podcast there. You can find books there. You can find what I do, and everything is KwesiMillington.com. And I appreciate having you to interview me as well. And you were actually in one of my talks as an example of resilience. So I appreciate being on here.
I love it. It's a gift that keeps on giving, eh?
Absolutely.
Okay. Everybody, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Fear Being Average podcast.